House Finance come to order. It's 8:34. We have members present: Representative Guttenberg, Representative Costello, Stoltz, Representative Thompson, Vice Chair Newman, and Representative Guerra. We have a quorum to do business. We had previously had presentations on four board extensions, which we'd held. We have the larger overall fiscal issue about boards and commissions and the underfunding. But we weren't going to solve that before we needed to get moving through the process. So there have been some revisions on the fiscal note and analysis. I'm going to ask Mr. George to come up and go through all four bills consecutively. And we'll come back to each of them on fiscal notes if we have questions. But does everybody have their – and we'll go in the order that it's – that were listed on here, 140, 239, 240, and 241. So folks can follow in order. And we can certainly have the fiscal note discussion again on final passage. Welcome, Mr. George.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of House Finance. For the record, my name is Daniel George. I serve as staff representative Stoltz and the Finance Committee. Before members, or shortly as soon as the copier is done, will be a copy of Professional Licensing Program's annual report from Commerce, December 2013. That is the backup for where these numbers come from in the fiscal notes. Members will note that there are four replacement draft fiscal notes for House Bills 239, 240, 241, and 242. The front page has remained the same, other than the fact that it is a co-chair's authored note. On the second page under the analysis, my apologies, through the chair, Representative Thompson, this is House Bill 239.
You're starting at we're going the order on the list, 140. Oh.
That's the right bill.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, thank you. Thank you for overlooking my mistake. Thank you, Mr. George.
Through the chair, on page two of the fiscal note for House Bill 239, which is OMB component number 2360, dated 3/11/2014. The analysis in the first three paragraphs remains the same. However, new language has been added, which begins with below is a summary of the BOE's revenues, expenditures, and carry forward balance. That would be for the extend the Board of Examiners and Optometry. It begins with the FY12 and 13 biennium data, the Board's revenues, expenditures, surplus and deficit, and cumulative surplus and deficit, as well as a description of the FY08 to FY2011 cumulative data and number of licensees. This format is repeated in each of the fiscal notes. Just for reference, the board's revenues in 2012-2013 were $74,540, and their expenditures were $94,478, with a biennium deficit of $19,938 and a cumulative surplus deficit of $44,755. Moving on to House Bill 240. House Bill 240, draft fiscal note from the House Finance Committee, OMB component number 2360. The second page of the fiscal note, in the same format in the language, reflects that the FY 2012-2013 biennium data, and this is for the extending the Board of Chiropractic Examiners, the board's revenues were $179,215. Their expenditures were $168,800 for a surplus of $10,415 and a cumulative surplus or deficit of a surplus of $80,344. Moving on to House Bill 241. OMB component number 2360, a fiscal note dated 3/11/2014 by the House Finance Co-Chairs. The first three paragraphs of language remains the same. The FY 2012-2013 biennium data, the board's revenues were $63,165. Their expenditures were $85,197 for a deficit of $22,032 and a cumulative surplus of $112,195. And for House Bill 242, OMB component number 2360 for extending the patient and physical, excuse me, the patients and occupational therapy board. I believe that's correct. Dated 3/11/2014 by the House Finance Co-Chairs. On the second page of the analysis, the Physical Therapy and Occupational Board's revenues for 2012-2013 biennium were $250,000. Their expenditures were $325,365 for a deficit of $75,365, and the cumulative deficit was $55,238. Those are the fiscal notes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The OMB component number is the same for all of these. Is that the same consistent from corporations, business licensing, and professional, or how do they allocate these numbers? Do you know?
I believe we have department staff here who can explain the allocations, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, we can do those on the fiscal
okay.
notes.
And, yeah.
I just, because we had held these and it was the fiscal issues, I wanted to go through these all at once. Certainly we can ask those questions on each bill, and I think department staff is all queued up for that when they do come up. Mr. George, you can be excused, and we'll bring the sponsor forward, and we'll deal with the bills one at a time. And if you wish to bring staff, certainly. We'll go in the same order, Representative Reinbold, 239, 240, 241, and 242. So it's our intent. We'll go through each bill, make just any you'll be available for make any presentation you wish to. We've previously had the auditor discuss the bills. We had the public testimony and close it in all of these, and I think we had a round of fiscal note discussion, but we have new fiscal notes. Any bill presentation, and then our intent is to, Representative Newman will make a motion on each one, and we'll have the committee discussion as necessary, just to let folks know our process.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman Stoltz, and also members of the committee. I really appreciate you guys. I know you're working really, really hard, and I thank you for coming in this morning and listening to these bills. I know that you have heard 239, you know, the four that we've just worked on. And so we're going to go over those just really briefly first and see if there's any questions since the presentation.
What is your vision on this bill, Representative Reinbold?
For 239?
Yes.
To keep these examiners.
Examiners. Softball.
This is a board of optometry.
The board of morticians.
I'm just dying to see that one.
Good issue.
Please proceed.
If you can.
We just want to make sure that we continue to see clearly and keep these examiners in business so that we can have a lot of great doctors to go to. So hope to move this bill out of committee and keep high-quality optometrists in business.
Very good. Are there any questions for Representative Reinbold on the optometry bill? Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair. I move House Bill.
I just want to note we've had the fiscal note discussion. Were there any questions? Did you want to ask a question on this one, Representative Costello?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and thank you for the sponsor for bringing these forward. And my question actually may be for the department, but this is one of the boards that's carrying forward a deficit, and I'm curious what the legislature is communicating by extending a board that has a deficit.
Come on up, Mr. Haberger. I know you've been dying. And Representative Guttenberg, you had a question at this
yeah.
time afterwards. Representative Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Habinger, when the legislature extends a board that has a deficit.
I'll object to the motion to move the bill.
thank you, Mr. Chair. What implications does that have for the budget and also the department's actions moving forward to set the fees?
For the record, my name is Don Haberger. I'm Director of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. Through the Chair, Representative Costello, We recognize some programs are in a deficit position, as we have indicated through a report that we had given to the legislature. The department is very cognizant of the business environment and trying to make it licensing fees less onerous insofar as significant fees are concerned. There are some programs that are experiencing more programs that are seeing some significant fee increases, some at 100%. We have heard from both the boards and our licensees that these present a hardship. And so in some programs, we are using an approach where we're taking them into compliance over a couple of cycles.
So you're expecting to adjust the fees then if this bill passes?
I believe it's optometry, and I'd have to double check, but I believe we did increase them 100% the last time to help them catch up.
And, I know we've spoken in the past in the budget subcommittee and also in this committee of more transparency for the boards and the members of the boards. Is there any effort underway to share their fiscal status online or provide more transparency?
Through the chair, Representative Costello, yes, transparency is something that the department takes seriously. There's a number of things we've implemented to increase that transparency. A simple one is that I require at every meeting that an executive member of the division staff presents information to them. Many boards meet quarterly, and so either myself or my operations manager or our administrative officer is there presenting this information. Also, as a part of that initiative, we are bringing this information, particularly around fee adjustment time, and that discussion includes the boards typically about 6 months ahead of any adjustment. And then lastly, the department, the division rather, puts this information online both on a quarterly basis and at a year-end fiscal basis, and any member of the public can access that through the CBPL website.
Thank you.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All of these have the same OMB components. What is that an indication of? Are they all grouped together, or are they're obviously not separated out? So what does the OMB component number indicate?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I'll have to confess my ignorance. What do you mean by OMB component?
On our you want to help out, Mr. Leibold?
I thought it was a simple question.
Please just introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Arnold Liebel, policy analyst.
Liebel, excuse me.
I was not prepared for this question here, but in preparing fiscal notes, the OMB component is basically the budgetary structure for how that funding will flow through the budget. These boards are all commissions boards are all within that same OMB component number. So, for the purposes of the budget structure, they would all be summarized within that OMB component number and then broken out in detail through the department's budget.
Okay, that, and another question, if I may.
Please, sure. Representative Guttenberg.
At the end of the fiscal year, when we're dealing with the budget, do we sweep all of these debts in and pay them and then just carry forward the negative number year after year, or how does that stand in their bank accounts, for lack of a better term?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, each year in the I believe it's the operation budget, you put in specific language that carry forwards both negative and a positive balance, and then we as a matter of compliance with statute, carry that as well. And we keep track of that.
Thank you.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Habegger. This just relates to all the reports. So if we're looking for cost savings.
Arnold, you're off the hook if you want. I know you don't. No, people don't like to be up at the table.
And we've had some painful cost savings that we have to deal with. What would be the impact if we had boards meet by teleconference, and then if folks wanted to travel on their own, they could? What do you think the impact would that be? Of that would be if we tried to save money so that we could save the fees for board members?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, it's an excellent question. Boards already are utilizing teleconferences in conjunction with personal meetings. I know, for example, the medical board feels it's necessary to meet both from meet in a very populated area of the state, as well as getting out into rural, more real rural communities to make sure that they're in touch with their constituency. The division honors that desire of the board, so that's how we handle that.
Through the chair. And would you have any power to say, look, we're trying to keep fees down. We don't want the high fees to result in a call for the state to start paying for this stuff. The new rule will be meetings by teleconference, and folks are welcome to travel on their own.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra. Do I feel empowered? I think I can make that determination. Do I think it's always wise to override a board for certain things when they think it's in their best interest? No, sir, I do not.
All right. And then through the chair, just I guess I would just ask you to consider to maximize the use of teleconference when possible, but maybe you're doing that already. But the other question is, for the boards that are in deficit, I suppose it could be a hardship to make them catch up all in 1 year. So do you have the discretion to let them catch up maybe over 2 or 3 years?
Representative, through the chair, Representative Guerra, currently we have a few programs that we are doing that. I've talked about that in previous hearings, so yes.
That was your way of saying I wasn't listening. That was polite, thank you.
Yeah. I don't know that I'd went as far as the travel. These are volunteers who come from professions where they're giving up a lot of their time. I don't think they enjoy the travel to a board meeting, or they're taking away time from if they're a physician or an architectural professional or an accountant. We're asking people to do service here. I think there's a lot of ways we can. I think the larger problem on cost is probably. Investigations that probably aren't as well grounded, and those are the things that are really eating the cost. I guess we could do this legislative process. I could be back in Chugiak in the valley and just calling in, and we know how well that would work. But these are professional members and public members putting a lot of time in. I don't want to put a ratchet on them and what they feel they need to do. I just don't want it to be on the record that I think they are judicious. These are people from the private sector. I think they hate costs. They're paying for them. I think they have a better control than most of us. And it's the real issue is the investigations, and that's the part that's spiraling out of here. Representative Thompson, I'm sorry for editorializing while you were waiting.
All right, Mr. Co-Chair, I appreciate it. I wanted to point out some of the things that you just mentioned. That most of these boards have good intentions of not running in deficits. They raise their own dues to pay for their board's travel to meet in person, and I can't see where that we can try to stop that. Like you mentioned, Representative Co-Chair, most of those deficits are caused sometimes by investigations and lawsuits that get piled onto them when they're just trying to monitor their profession, and somebody's doing something wrong, the state – charges them for going after somebody that's not even in their profession or licensed in their profession. So there's got to be a way to figure this out, but I think that you can't tell them how to spend their own money.
Mr. Chair, I just did have one follow-up.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. And actually, I don't disagree with the last two comments. I was just sometimes you ask a question to explore something, and I think the last two speakers are right about travel. But on investigations, does the Department of Law do the investigations, or normally, or who from the state does do they pay to do the investigations?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, the division has their own investigators. They're charged essentially with investigating business licensing as well as professional licensing. So their enforcement, our enforcement staff for Title VIII.
And then the only question through the chair on the cost charged to the boards for the investigations is, you know, I know sometimes like the Department of Law, when they're in a lawsuit, will bill an hourly rate that's much higher than what the Department of Law attorneys get paid. So when the boards are being charged for their investigation time, is that the actual cost of the investigator, or are they coming up with some hourly rate that is in excess of what the real cost is?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, it is the time charge, hourly rate, that we charge the board. For detailed information, our investigators positively keep their time, meaning that if they have several programs that they're working for, they're keeping that on their timesheets with, you know, by the, I think, half hour is where we break it down. And so they're only being charged for that time they work.
Just through the chair, the hourly rate that they're charging the board, is that a fully accurate reflection of what those investigators cost, or does the hourly rate include a markup? I mean, that does sometimes happen in the state and city government. So that's what I just want to make sure that the hourly rate that's being billed is really exactly what these folks cost, so the board's not paying more than what the investigator actually costs.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, it is their time cost. There is no markup.
We'll check that one out. Are there any other questions on this bill? And I don't want the optometrist to think that we were just scrutinizing the bill. I think a lot of the questions on all four bills were being asked on the first, but I may be wrong. I'll remove my objection to the bill advancing. Is it? No, there was. Representative Newman, did you make the motion? Oh, you were going to. Okay. Okay.
This bill's covered, I believe. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House Bill number 239, version / A, from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Thank you. Is there any objection? Hearing none, House Bill 239 is moved with individual recommendations and the attached new fiscal note. Representative Newman, want to make our next motion?
Okay.
We'll just cut a corner here on this one and have you engage in it. Yeah, why don't we do your presentation first?
Well, it's going to be simple. Basically, just with all the for House Bill 240, it's the to extend the termination date of the Board of Chiropractor Examiners, and with all the tumbles and falls this legislature has made, and many people that we know, I think it's really important to keep high quality chiropractors in business. And so, basically, I just want to urge support of this legislation to allow the Board of Chiropractor Examiners to continue to carry out their duties to effectively license, regulate, and to protect and promote the public health, welfare, and safety of Alaskans.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill number 240, version / A, from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
You know what I forgot to ask? Before we do that, wouldn't you withdraw that?
I'd like to withdraw that,
Mr. Chairman. I was so anxious to move on these bills. Are there any amendments to this bill? We previously discussed the fiscal note. And unless there are any other questions on that, we'll let the previous testimony stand on the fiscal note. Now, sorry for that, Representative Newman. A little bit rusty today.
I move House Bill number 240, version / A, from committee with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Seeing no objection,
just
Representative, I'll object. Representative Holmes.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to put on the record that I'm looking at the legislative audit report, and it seems like that this board is doing its job, and the ledge auditor recommended that we keep them going.
Yep. Thank you for renewing that testimony. It had been probably been at least 10 days since we've had this up before. Well, I'll remove my objection. Seeing no other objection, 240 is moved from committee with individual recommendations in the attached new fiscal note. 241.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. First of all, I want to make a comment that I really appreciate your questions in regards to the fiscal notes. It is just a delight for me to see that you guys were drilling down and trying to have accountability, and I don't get often to be up in this room, and I was very impressed with the questioning and really trying to improve business in Alaska. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just do a brief statement on 241. House Bill 241 is an act extending the termination date of the Board of Marital and Family Therapy and providing for an effective date. These professionals provide very important service in our community, and I just want to urge your support of this legislation to allow the Board of Marital and Family Therapy to continue to carry out their duties effectively, to effectively license, regulate marital and family therapists, and to protect and promote the health, welfare, and safety of Alaskans.
And I note we've had a previous audit report and presentation on this, and there's a recommendation to extend. Are there any amendments? See none. Note, we've previously discussed the fiscal note, unless there's any questions on the fiscal note. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill number 241, version /A, from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Seeing no objection. 3-3 so far. Bill's removed from committee with individual recommendation of members and the attached fiscal note. Our last easy one, Representative Reinbold. 242.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, and I do appreciate this very much. You are working very efficiently, and I truly appreciate this. It's an act extending the termination date for state physical therapy and occupation therapy board and providing for an effective date. Once again, these people provide just a tremendous, the therapists provide a tremendous opportunity for us to be healthy, and when there is injuries and things at work, then they have the ability to help renew and help people get back to work. And I think it's very, very important that we keep this board in place. So I urge your support on this legislation to allow state physical therapy and occupational therapy board to continue to carry out their duties to effectively license, regulate physical and occupational therapists, and to protect and promote the health and welfare of Alaskans.
And similarly, the board is recommended. Our auditor has recommended extension, and previously noted. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Perhaps it's to the auditor or someone, whoever can answer the question. The recommendation from audit is it's case management system. Is there not a uniform case management system across all these boards and commissions? Or, I mean, obviously it isn't from this recommendation. I was wondering if any looks like
Ms. Curtis will come up and we'll get the response on the record.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, representing the Division of Legislative Audit. Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, the division's investigative unit did implement a new case management system in 2010. Previously, they had a system in place that needed to be upgraded. Our findings and recommendations relate to all occupational boards that utilize the investigative unit to investigate their cases. There are problems with the management system. We've had the same finding in the last 2 years, and we recommend improvements.
I mean, so this isn't unique for this board?
Representative Guttenberg, through the chair, it's not unique. It's in every occupational board since that audit in 2013.
Yeah, I I have a lot of appreciation for this profession after being in a car accident without a car, if you can guess that equation. without my physical therapist in Eagle River, I don't think I'd be walking as well as I would. And way beyond, spent far more hours with them than the surgeon, I can tell you that. But, appreciate this profession. Are there any amendments? Seeing none, and we'll let the previous discussion on the fiscal note and the subsequent discussion suffice unless there are objections. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill number 242, version backslash A, from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Hearing no objection, House Bill 242 is moved from committee with individual recommendation and the attached revised House Finance fiscal note. That will take a brief at ease. It's come back to order. It's 9:06 a.m. Back to order after the previous four bills. We have House Bill 140 before us. Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Chairman Stoltz and members of the committee. This is my first piece of legislation that I've ever introduced, so I'm more married to this piece of legislation, and maybe...
Under Article 1, Section 25, you can't marry a bill, but you can have a committed relationship with it.
Okay. Well, I was just hoping that the marriage therapists, I might not need to go to them after if this bill doesn't go anywhere. But anyway, I'll get back to the intent of the legislation. When I was pursuing this current position that I'm in, one of the very first things that I did was go door to door, and first I decided to start with all the small businesses in my area that I had been going to for so long, and I thought, wow, if I'm ever able to represent them, I want to know what these people think, what they feel, what's on their mind. And the first business that I went to, I had gone many, many times, and it was an excellent restaurant. And basically he said, if there's one thing I want to tell you, I want you to help with the regulation process. We're over-regulated. And he just felt like he really, really pleaded to help, and it left a very lasting impression on me. Thus, the reason that I brought House Bill 140 together. And basically, with the luck of the draw in organization, I ended up being chair of the Regulatory Review Committee. So I thought, okay, maybe this is destiny that I need to go ahead and address the concerns. So I'm going to briefly go over what House Bill 140, the intention, the overall intention of House Bill 140 was to provide more transparency in the regulatory process. And also reel in just a little bit so that more is incorporated in the regulatory process so that it is more impactful and also more transparent. So I'm going to go ahead and start with Section 1, with the bill that you have before you. Basically, Section 1 amends the uncodified law by adding a new section. The short title is the Regulation Impact Transparency Act. So House Bill 140 will require additional information in state agency notices of proposed regulations specifically to increase transparency of the proposed fiscal impacts including the private sector. So basically what Section 1 would do is allow the materials that were adopted by reference or any backup supporting material to become more transparent so people can review those. So we're going to move down to Section 2. Section 2 amends AS44.62.190D proposed regulations under current Alaska Statute 44.62190D, the agency is required to provide the reason for proposed action. If the reason is federal, House Bill 140 will require the identification of the federal action. That is the reason for the proposed regulation. It also has a requirement for the estimate compliant cost to the private person, including private businesses, other state agencies, and municipalities, in aggregate form for these stakeholders. Okay. And finally, in Section 3, it amends the Notice of Proposed Regulations. It adds a new subsection that states a person may not bring a court action in challenge of regulation if a state agency inaccurately or insufficiently provides a cost estimate. And Section 4, we've seen many, many times, it basically amends the uncodified law by adding a new section requiring an effective date, and there would be no retroactivity with this, so it will be just whatever effective date is put on this legislation. So with that, I'm going to make a few comments. We do expect some pushback on this bill, okay? There's some agencies and some little bits, so when there is public testimony on this, that we do expect a little bit.
I'd just like to note we have here we have OMB, we have the Department of Law, and we have a couple of AOGCs, the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. They've signed up. They're here for questions, so I will allow the interest of the committee to see if they are asked to be called up. So just I want to preface that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to see people online. I will tell you that in your packet there are letters of support from the Alaska Municipal League, the State Chamber of Commerce, the National Federation of Independent Business, the Council of Alaska Producers, and the Wasilla Area Seniors. So they all last year provided letters of support. Mr. Chairman, there is input when I was going around to committee members from finance. There is some additional input. So we are working on a committee substitute to incorporate the valuable input that I've got from some of your committee members. And with that, I'm here to take questions.
Questions for Representative Reinbold, and if there's an interest, we can call up any of those folks I've referenced. Representative Costello.
Thank you, and through the chair, I wanted to thank the sponsor for this legislation. I've signed on as a co-sponsor because I too have heard from constituents and businesses about our over-regulated society that we now live in, and I encourage any effort to make the regulation process more transparent, and so I appreciate this legislation. My question, actually, Mr. Chair, is for the Department of Law representative online.
Mr. Weaver. Mr. Weaver, are you available? Are you? I didn't know you by face, so please join us right next to Representative Reinbold. Welcome, sir. Dragged a little paper with you there.
Through the chair, my name is Steve Weaver, W-E-A-V-E-R. I am an assistant attorney general with the Department of Law, and it is a pleasure to be here to answer questions today.
You're under oath here, isn't
you? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
you're not under oath, then. Representative Costello.
Mr. Weaver, does the department ever give instructions to the does the Department of Law ever give instructions to other departments and state agencies with regard to communication around proposed regulations?
Through the chair, the Department of Law basically our function is more doing the legal review of the regulations itself. We advise agencies and talk to them about the Administrative Procedure Act. Where we talk to them and about doing outreach to the public, it is in terms of what the Administrative Procedure Act requires. It requires several things. It requires newspaper notice. It requires posting on the electronic Alaska Online Public Notice System. If an agency also believes that certain interested persons might want to speak on the regulations, or if a person interested in the regulations has asked in advance for notice, then the agency provides notice for those people.
So, Mr. Weaver, if an individual Alaskan calls an agency and has a question about a proposed regulation, are they able to get answers?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Costello, they are able to get answers to questions. We encourage that agencies share those answers with the rest of the public, basically on the website, perhaps. If it is a question as to legal interpretation, an agency, and this is a regulation already on the books, agency might be able to would be able to consult with the Department of Law attorney that directly advises them, and then the Assistant Attorney General if they have particular questions for that we as the general gatekeepers could answer. They would consult us about interactions with the public.
And Mr. Weaver, is that same courtesy and transparency also extended to stakeholders when they call agencies and have questions about proposed regulations?
Through the chair, yes. We encourage agencies, if they have questions about proposed regulations, to share information. One thing that we do ask to watch out for is that if they are getting into a discussion of the meaning of a regulation, they have to be aware that they might be that there might be other people interested in it. We want the whole public, all of the public, to be prepared when they come in. I'm sorry. We want all the public to know about regulations and their meaning. So the one thing we do ask agencies to watch out for is to make personal commitments to one particular stakeholder, for example. That would be not sharing information with other stakeholders, and we want to, our objective is a level playing field.
Mr. Co-Chair, the response that we just received is not in line with information that I've received previous to this, and so
I was just going to ask Representative Reinbold why she's introduced this bill if everything's working. It's
exactly. There is a lot.
That's a little facetious question, I hope. Representative, did you have a follow-up?
Well, I did, Mr. Co-Chair. So the statute that was referenced earlier includes a section called Style and Form, and it's about four lines long, and it allows the Department of Law to revise, when necessary, a drafting manual for administrative regulations that prescribes the style and forms for submitting regulations. And so the Department of Law has gone ahead and done that, and the document is a 250-page drafting manual for administrative regulations. And it's my understanding that this manual has basically certain prohibitions for answering questions over the phone, and which then is considered ex parte communication depending on who the caller is. And so, you know, sitting in this position as a lawmaker and hearing from people about inability to get information from departments about proposed regulations, I take that quite seriously, and I think that in Alaska, you know, we are separated by vast distances, and not everybody is able to get on a plane and attend meetings in person or whatever. And picking up the phone and asking a question to me seems like something that we should be encouraging, more communication about proposed regulations. And so I'm very curious about this, this issue, and I would like to be able to get some answers before we see the bill move on its merry way. Thank you.
Mr. Weaver.
Through the chair, Representative Costello, I think I have a better understanding of your question now. One of the questions that frequently comes up is once the administrative process starts, in other words, once the formal notice of proposed regulations goes out, what leeway does the agency have for one-on-one communications with a particular person? The issue there is that if you have a one-on-one conversation with a particular stakeholder and take a position on a regulation, that is not being shared with the other stakeholders. It's not that the Department of Law or that an agency would not want to communicate with the stakeholder. It's just there's a process by which a stakeholder submits comments along with all other stakeholders. So it's and then everybody gets the same access to the decision maker, the agency decision maker, that that the law allows for. The problem with a one-on-one phone call, specifically if it is a one-on-one phone call where an agency, where a member of the public, certainly, in good faith, wants to do a, present a comment. The issue with a one-on-one phone call to present a comment is that there is no easy way to make a record of the comment, in which case the agency might be at odds with the commenter if the commenter thinks the agency got the comment wrong. The other thing is there is no way for the general public to see the comments, and the third way is that there may be a sense that regulations are developed in a back room, so to speak, that other members of the public that did not get an opportunity to speak one-on-one over the phone with a agency decision maker, they might feel left out, or they might feel that the public notice and comment process is meaningless. Take, for example, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. They do a lot of things through the public comment process. It's very important. They're not oriented necessarily. I don't mean to speak too much for the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, but the way their public comment structure is posed is they have each regulated utility, members of the public, they submit their comments, everybody is playing on the same level playing field. They all know what the rules of the game are to comment meaningfully. And there's also a time period allowed so that members of the public can reply to each other's comments. And that is what the Administrative Procedure Act looks to. I understand your concern. There is also particularly if regulations are already on the books, there is a right of the public to certainly communicate with agency decision makers. We agree with that. It is just that in the formal regulations process, it is important that all commenters be on the same level playing field. We don't want one party having access that the rest of the members of the public don't have, and we want to be able to keep a good, solid record of comments received, how the agencies treated them, so that if we get into litigation years down the line, we'd be able to defend the agency and its procedures. I hope that answer is more responsive. I apologize for taking a long time on it.
So if an individual calls and has a question, the question is posted online for everyone to see the answer. And a stakeholder calls with a question to understand the regs before they can comment on them, and they aren't given an answer, and they are pushed to the comment period where they're now commenting on something they don't understand. Is it possible for the departments to post the question online and the answer just like they are doing with the public? Because it seems that you're disadvantaging a party by not having the conversation for fear that it might end up in court later and that the person on the agency end is issuing a decision when, in fact, the caller is just asking a question. Believe me, I will fall asleep reading regulations. I'm sure that there are questions that are, legitimate questions that come up when when we produce volumes and volumes of regulations?
Through the chair, Representative Costello, we have advice in place to agencies who anticipate a lot of questions on complicated regulations. One of the things we do encourage is if questions come in, that they have frequently, opportunities to answer frequently asked questions. We usually just do, in those cases we say, yes, please just, make the answers as public as possible so that it doesn't look like there is some sort of one-on-one backroom dealing in the process. Other agencies also do workshops. We don't have a problem with workshops. Again, if there is any legal proviso we add, it's just one that you probably would understand, that if an agency says something, they better be prepared to stand by their statement because that's what they've represented to the public that the regulation does.
Thank you. It sounds complicated, Mr. Co-Chair.
Well, it is, and I appreciate Representative Reinbold taking on this project because a regulation, an unelected bureaucrat can do a regulatory process, which goes on 12 months a year, not just the 90 days we have, can enact laws that we have to beat our heads on, get through a bicameral process, fight those same regulators through the process, and then because that regulator works for the governor, likely would have to almost sustain a veto or override a veto. I mean, hypothetically, if you even get that far, and as the one of our self-proclaimed constitutional scholars on the House floor debate yesterday at 4:57, I noted the time. He noted that an attorney general, he specifically mentioned Mike Garrity. Can make an opinion that has the force of law, which is often backing up these regulators. So it's a pretty one-sided, and I hope people listen to that. The Attorney General, which is often under the signature of an Assistant Attorney General, which is often backing up these regulators, can make a decision with a stroke of a pen and a pronouncement that we have to muster probably practically two-thirds vote through a bicameral process in a 90-day session every 2 years. So it's this is a lot larger issue than it might appear. It's just a regulations bill, and I mean to editorialize, but I think the public listening, I'd like to just put a punctuation point on what Representative Reinbold is doing. And I'm sorry I made you wait, Ms. Representative Munoz.
No, it's following that line of thinking. I'm curious about the process of review when you're looking for consistency with statute and statutory authority for the regulation. If you find that something goes beyond statutory authority, what happens then? I mean, what is the process that you go through?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, we try to work with the agency to get them to a point where the regulations don't pose a legal concern. There is the power vested in the regulations attorney to disapprove a regulation that is not consistent with statutory authority, but we rarely use that power in the interest of ensuring that agencies do their activities in conformance with statutory authority. We try to work with the agencies on perhaps different regulations, or perhaps a regulation that gets them part of the way or most of the way where they would like to go without necessarily having to have a disapproval and without having to violate a statute or go outside their statutory authority.
So to follow up then, so is it common then to send regulations back to the agencies for further work and clarification and to be consistent with statute?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, yes, that can happen fairly often.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Representative Wilson. I presume you always have a question, right?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Representative Wilson first. I want to put you in the queue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I'm late. I had a bill hearing, so if the question's already been asked, I'm sorry. So
go ahead and ask it again because this is a if I mean, you know, even if it has, okay. You're here.
I'm going to make this a little bit more of a personal question. We've had regulations proposed by DEC for air quality in Fairbanks. And so with this bill and talking about how it would impact the community, would if this were in place when the air regulations, proposed regulations came out, would DEC then have had to tell us how much it's going to cost our homes or whatever to abide by their regulations? I mean, is that the cost analysis that we're talking about for the community?
In aggregate form, and if there was any insufficiencies or any, they couldn't come back and sue, but yes, the intention was to impact the businesses or in aggregate, or the municipalities in aggregate form, the impacts of a regulation, yes.
You know where Mr. Reinbold's intent now, Department of Law.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, as a legal matter, I would not be able to put an opinion as to whether there would be legal. It's a hypothetical. The legal answer would depend in part on what it means to provide, you know, on questions like what it means, and I'm working off the bill language now, to provide a good faith estimate, what it means to be, for that estimate to be in the aggregate, what it means for information to be available to a state agency.
Follow up. Our frustration in our community is that we were given a lot of regulation. We could ask questions, but we couldn't get answers to them. Yet we were asked to comment on them when those regulations were going to be put into a state implementation plan. We didn't know what the plan looked like, still don't know what it looks like, but yet we're commenting based on what's going to happen with them. And so my question, you know, as we have these, you know, I mean, I'm thrilled that Representative Reinbold is doing this because, you know, I'm tired of looking at what's going to happen to the state because it's not the state I really care about how it's going to impact them. It's my residents. So I see that we're going to talk about the businesses. We talk about the municipality, I'm assuming, as a municipality. But we have a lot of regulation that actually impacts the individual and not necessarily the municipality as a government entity. And so although I respect that you're the Department of Law, how do we make sure that our constituents know what the regulations do and have hearings on what they do by the department when all they say is, well, we'll have a workshop, and then when we go to the workshop, we can't get answers to questions, we can't know how those regulations, what they're going to be utilized for. It ties our hands, and then we have to hope, which is what we're doing now, since January 21st, it closed off for public comment. If they don't substantially change those regulations, they're going to be dropped upon our community, which will have a huge impact. So what are we supposed to do? I mean, if you can't tell us, who's supposed to?
Well, through the chair, agencies, the Department of Law is basically tasked with enforcement of the Administrative Procedure Act. How big a project and its impact and how, you know, the length of the public comment periods and the decisions to hold workshops, the decision to post frequently asked questions, those are all, you know, basically what the agencies do. Your questions are very good ones. An agency can do basically the Administrative Procedure Act sets a floor, not a ceiling. An agency can always do additional outreach. It can do supplemental public comment periods if they are getting comments that say, hey, I don't understand what these regulations are going to do. Give us more of an opportunity to comment. They can hold workshops. The principal concern in terms of answering questions, if it's one-on-one, is that there's no record of that. And that it could be that a member of the public might get an advantage that other members of the public wouldn't have. That's the principal thing that the Department of Law deals with. In terms of outreach, we do not discourage outreach. It's and certainly the more outreach, the better. And we tell that to our clients.
Follow up.
Representative Wilson.
I'm sorry, I have to ask.
No, keep going.
So it's okay to give everybody a disadvantage versus anybody an advantage? I mean, that's basically what you're saying, is that as long as everybody in our community is disadvantaged, then you're okay, because we can't answer questions because they'll be one-on-one.
Through the chair. Well, it's not really a matter of, you know, everybody being disadvantaged. If there is, that's the purpose of oral hearings, that's the purpose of workshops, to have an opportunity for everybody to come in and participate in the process on an even playing field.
I think one of the problems we have, I think our constituents and our small businesses kind of feel like the coach making his case to the hockey referee. You have two chances, generally, slim and none. And if that's not accurate, there's a perception of that. And I'm sorry about overusing sports metaphors, but that's how a lot of our folks feel.
But Mr. Chair, the thing is yes, on these regulations, we were able to go to an open house, but questions couldn't be answered. Mm-hmm. Okay, some were, some weren't. Yes, we were able to, after much discussion, have a public comment time. But again, I'm commenting on regulations that I don't know how they're going to be utilized. That's my only opportunity as a community to be able to do that. As long as they're not substantially changed, whatever that means, then they're going to be, you know, drawn on not just the community as the borough or as the others, but or the businesses, but for these particular ones, and I know we're not supposed to use our own, but I'm guilty of it, in here doesn't talk about how about the average person who now might not be able to afford to live in the community because of these new regulations. So with your answer of saying we can't have one-on-one conversations because of, you know, giving an advantage to someone else, literally by saying that, you are disadvantaging everyone because no one's questions are being done if the department, and that's where the if comes from, chooses not to have that opportunity. And so I guess my question is, us as a community, if a department chooses to do the minimum floor, as you just said, and chooses not to do any more, do we just sue the department? Is that their only recourse that we have?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, you know, if there is a problem where the Administrative Procedure Act has not been complied with, you can always, you know, there's always judicial review. There's always judicial review available of the regulations themselves. If your question is, there may be some confusion about one-on-one conversation. The issue that the Department of Law wants would be transparency, because that is, you know, the administrative hearing process, once a public notice goes out, sets up a formal hearing process at which each member of the public, it has the opportunity to comment on a level playing field. Now, if an agency has not gone out done enough outreach and there is difficulty amongst the public as to whether the regulations are understandable, it may be perhaps an answer that the agency itself can provide in terms of before this committee, before the resources. If it's environmental law, it would be before the resources committee. The only thing that the Department of Law would really be concerned with is that regulations, first off, that comments be on the record, because they need to be on the record, you know, because well down the line, if somebody challenges a regulation, you want a record of the public comments received, and you want to be able to know, you know, how the agency responded to them. You cannot do that with a phone call. A phone call, as intuitive as it is, doesn't provide a record that can be reviewed. It's a source of it can be a source of confusion, particularly if the commenter thinks that the agency got it wrong. Say, for example, there is a project that involves multiple stakeholders, maybe multiple oil companies. One oil company has a one-on-one conversation about how the regulation should look with somebody at commissioner level. How is that going to work to the disadvantage of the other oil companies? Will the other oil companies feel left out of an opportunity to meaningfully comment? Would they feel that regulations were being made in the back room? Would environmental groups think that? Because environmental groups look for reasons to sue. I'm not sure if this really gets at your question. Part of this is because I'm really not intimate with what's happened on the ground with the Department of Environmental Conservation regulations. The regulations are not up formally to the Department of Law for review. Perhaps a Department of Environmental Conservation representative would be able to help you with the, you know, help you more with those regulations.
Have you ever thought about talking to any of those guys?
Well, you know, Mr. Chair, it just seems to me that as long as, you know, and I'm sorry if I, well, I'm not sorry. So I'm not gonna say
I was just going to correct you.
Yeah, thank you. It appears to me that as long as we keep everybody at a disadvantage, and that's really what we're doing, because as long as we don't answer anybody's questions and we just, and they're doing the basics, so we probably can't sue them because they're at the floor. They've taken public comment. They've had meetings, quite a few meetings. But the bottom line is you can have as many meetings as you want, and if the person, people who are commenting don't know what the intent is, talk about close behind, you know, behind closed doors, it's the departments. It's not our citizens. We're just asked to be part of a process that we are disadvantaged. Yes, we've leveled the playing field. Everybody in our community is at the same disadvantage because none of us understand what the plan that the regulations are going to go into. And unfortunately, we get one shot, one bite of the apple at the end of the day. So if there's anything missing, in my opinion, well, there's a lot of things missing, but I know they won't let you do quite a bit of that. But let's not forget the public, because the borough or city is a government entity. And when you're talking about something that's going to impact people's everyday living, you know, that's a totally different number for us. If I can't use my wood stove and I have to go to gas or I have to go to oil, that's a huge impact. And I know this is one case. I don't know how many others are. But a lot of times we never look down into the public and what it can cost them. So I understand the department law can only say so much, and I just want to, and I thank the chair for letting me get my frustration out on this morning. But
it won't be the last time.
It won't, but thank you.
Representative Guttenberg. Oh, Representative Reinbold on the point.
Mr. Chairman, can I respond, please?
Please.
First of all, I want to bring your attention to the bill itself. And on page 2, line 6, it was so important to me to listen to the private sector, to the individual, that I made it absolutely the number one thing in the bill. So it's A, it addresses private persons to comply with the proposed action. So they absolutely need to listen in aggregate form of the impacts to the private sector, so we don't chase small businesses and individuals, you know, and put them in situations where they can't afford to live here any longer. And with that, may I also comment on Mr. Weaver's, Mr. Chairman?
Yep.
Basically, there's been a lot of concerns because people will call to inquire about a regulation, and they're not given the answer. They don't understand law. They don't understand, and they're running small businesses. They're very, very busy. Even asking them to go to a workshop, which we do appreciate, sometimes does have impacts to their business. So it's much quicker and easier if they're just able to pick up the phone, even if it's just 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, and be able to have an inquiry. Making a formal comment on a regulation they don't understand is not fair to the people.
Thank you. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the fiscal note talks about fish and game up to 400 proposals annually, and we can see how all the impacts to that would be. But would you consider, I'm just transitioning to something else right now, the changes in the Alaska Care Program, the state medical and retirees health care program, a change of regulation?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, there are a lot of basically personnel board regulations that address things like insurance for state employees. I wouldn't be able to answer your question about Alaska Care specifically. I can tell you, however, that the vast majority of personnel regulations are what we call matters of internal management. That is to say that they're, in this case, they're part of the employer-employee relationship. In situations like that, the regulations don't affect the public, and the legislature has recognized this, and therefore, basically, most personnel regulations are outside of the Administrative Procedure Act, and most regulations relating to insurance are outside the Administrative Procedure Act. That isn't to say that there aren't administrative procedures. It's just that, the legislature has set up different procedures. So the Personnel Board has its own procedures by statute, and the legislature has recognized that what they do are matters of internal management. Another example of that, Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, the vast majority of their regulations are not subject to the Administrative Procedure Act. This is because they behave as a market participant. And again, the legislature has recognized this and sets up their own administrative procedures specific by in statute to the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority.
I think I just assume the railroad is probably exempt from just about everything.
And does that apply to retirees as well?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I believe you would want to probably talk to somebody with more expertise in retirement law for that. Again, I can say that most personnel regulations and insurance regulations are recognized by the legislature to be
in common. If I may, Mr. Chair. So we're sitting here in this committee meeting, and a state agency is before us. We leave here, and I ask them to come to my office and sit down. I can't have a conversation over proposed or pending regulation. Is that considered ex parte?
Through the chair, the legislators can have discussions with entities about regulations, even regulations that are going through public comment. That's part of legislative oversight and is the prerogative of the second branch. What we go to when we talk
we
about
call it the other branch, we don't have it.
Yeah.
All right. I'd like to emphasize that when we talk about the concern about ex parte communications, we are talking about when the formal public comment period has commenced, when in effect a hearing has started, because that's what the statutes talk about. They talk about hearings. Discussions over the phone about what regulations mean after a regulation is on the books or before a regulation goes out the formal public notice when an agency wants to do outreach or scoping, there's a lot more latitude. The only thing we say is, agency, be prepared to live by what you say. And we encourage you strongly, if you have a good answer that you provide somebody about a regulation on the books or on a regulation that you're thinking about putting to public notice, do as much outreach as possible to share that information. But I don't want to misconstrue that somehow agencies can't receive phone calls about regulations. Of course they can. A citizen has the right to approach their agency and ask questions. The only thing we get concerned about is if somebody goes and thinks regs are a done deal before the public notice, somebody tries to, have a one-on-one back and forth about what a regulation should look like during the formal public comment period. Now, a purpose of a formal public comment period is, in fact, to get information and comments on regulations. If they're complicated regulations, we would certainly advise an agency to do scoping in advance. Scoping is always good. Outreach is always good. The Department of Law favors outreach. The only thing would be, is to avoid the appearance that regulations are being drafted in a back room and that the rest of the public's opportunity to comment is not meaningless.
Thank you.
All right.
I just said somehow we've lost the public relations battle when the voters trust your branch and the bureaucrats more than the legislature, because annulment of regulations has a pretty poor track record at the ballot box. So it's probably the worst case of PR management, because when the folks trust the folks that they vote for less than they do the unelected bureaucrats. So. But that's just I believe you probably worked on that issue as a staff representative when you was an omen of regulations. But it's one of those paradoxes of government, why the best tool we'd have to help them, they've rejected that, and the public has voted for the bureaucracy, so you guys are winning. Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill talks about a standard of good faith that the agencies will use to determine economic impact costs to individuals. Are you comfortable with that language, that that's clear enough for the agencies, what they are being asked to do?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, the way the bill is structured now, it talks to inaccuracy of a good faith estimate. First, let me say that we are, we believe in regulations transparency. We think that's an important goal. We appreciate the Representative Reinbold's interest in it. We appreciate this committee's interest in it. It's very important that regulations be transparent. When I look at language, when the Department of Law looks at language, our way of analyzing it is not to take a policy position. The Office of the Governor can take policy positions. Individual agencies take policy positions. We look at what is the possibility for litigation. In that sense, what our question would be is, does the current shield of basically curtailing litigation based on inaccuracy foreclose a lawsuit, say, let's say there's a mixing zone. The Department of Environmental Conservation proposes a mixing zone. Again, I'm not an expert on mixing zones. I'll just give you the layman's idea of them. A mixing zone is where, for example, a mine gets a permit to discharge a pollutant directly into a water body, because a characteristic of the water body, usually the current, is so strong that the pollutant will disperse rapidly and not cause an impact on state waters. The Department of Environmental Conservation has done regulations for mixing zones in the interest of promoting development. The question is, what happens if you are a disgruntled, environmental group, disgruntled representative of the tourist industry? Is it good faith, for example, to put out a number that represents only the cost to the mine? Will somebody come in and say,
a mining example instead of a commercial fishing regulation? That was
well.
Thank you. That's been consistent around.
But one of the other questions is: would in fact commercial fishers displeased with that? Then would they, would they say, "Well, we're not"?
That didn't
suing.
Help, by the way.
Yeah.
Litigants are litigants, they might try to, they will, if they are unhappy with a decision, they will look for places on the statute where they can hang their hat to do a lawsuit. And so I'm not saying that they would succeed. The Department of Law would defend against a lawsuit to the best of their ability. But I could not tell you that somebody might not bring a lawsuit saying, this isn't about the accuracy of the figure. It's about whether the agency acted in good faith.
Thank you. We're gonna let you go, Mr. Weaver, because I noticed that we have a couple of AOGCC commissioners here, and I doubt if they were just watching this out of general interest. Probably.
Through the chair.
Thank you for I appreciate you've been more candid than most folks we've had here, and I appreciate we had a little fun with you, but we did pursue a lot of avenues of information. I appreciate your candor and openness. Thank you, sir.
Sir, thank you for your time. We are available to answer additional questions at the committee's convenience.
Representative Reinbold.
Mr. Chairman, I would appreciate the opportunity to discuss an issue that was brought up today. Okay. I was not planning on bringing this up today, in all fairness, but I think that because the questions that were asked in this committee, that I feel it's important that I bring this up. You know, in my journey as Reg Review Chair and as a freshman legislator, I've learned a lot, and a lot about the Administrative Code Act as well. And unfortunately, some things that I've learned is the legislature has legislated a lot of our powers away to boards and also to the departments to write regulations. I tried to learn a lot, and one regulation in particular, granted it is a controversial issue, came before the committee during interim in August, okay? And as a chairman of the I found a statute that was in clear violation of this regulation. I didn't know what to do. So, knowing
the other way around.
I assume it's the other way around. Yeah.
Excuse me?
The other way around, right? The regulation was in violation of the statute.
Excuse me. Thank you very much for the clarification. Okay, so yes, the regulation was in violation of the statute. I very much appreciate that correction. So what I did as chair is I sent a letter to the Board of Personnel. And I said, you know, that I had issues with this regulation. Can you please wait till we get back into session so I can meet with my colleagues and discuss the intention of this law and make sure that this regulation was in compliance? Because I'd also read in that if the statute, the regulation has to reflect a statute, and if it doesn't, it's null and void. And just being innocent, you know, in just trying to read the letter of the law, I just asked for time. Unfortunately, I was at a meeting out of state, so I had sent a staff member to this board, this personnel board meeting, and to introduce my concerns. And so the department department administration passed out my letter to the media. And I was never personally have the opportunity to meet with them in regards to my concern. Then the personnel board, which is a board of three, by the way, went into executive session, had input from the Department of Law, and virtually, in my opinion, rolled me and my concerns, and then this regulation went into effect. And at this point, I still haven't, I invited the Attorney General to my office, and I was asking, I was just trying with the innocence of the statute, and I understand there was a court case, and I was very aware of the court case, but in the court case, from my knowledge, this statute had not been introduced into the court case, and that's where the messiness ended up coming in. And I was wondering, then regulations were written based on a court case, and that's why I was very, very concerned, and that's another reason that's reinforced. To me, if you look at the letter of the law, it says a regulation has to be a statute, and that's.
But you had introduced this legislation prior to your.
Oh, far.
That's just an ancillary issue that.
It just reinforced the reason for in improving the people being able to weigh in on regulations, and also what you'll see in the committee substitute, it reels in people such as the personnel board, so they have to have a little bit more accountability. I don't want to speak to the committee substitute, but when I have the opportunity.
Our members will work on preparing. I appreciate the suggestions, but that'll be the collective members work on a committee substitute. But okay. I appreciate your staff and you working with us to help provide direction of your intent.
Okay, thank you very much.
Representative Wilson.
Just some clarity, and it's kind of what the Department of Law brought up. Is part of the issue not just the cost analysis, some of that to the communities and the people, but actually what the floor of what is required by the departments, is that part of the issue here that we are or we're not addressing? I'm just trying to put down that we know that the departments are doing the floor of what we require them when they put out a regulation, Is that where some of this issue really is coming from, is that that needs to be clearer or changed?
And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like my staff to comment on that.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Crystal Keenum, and staff to Representative Reinbold, Representative Wilson through the chair. Some of the language that we've been working on in the committee substitute doesn't necessarily raise that floor. It doesn't call for more public hearings or things of that nature. But I'd be more than happy to work with you and your staff on.
Well, that's the way it works. You do work with us, whether you're
absolutely
happy or not. That's
absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to divide off the two issues it seems that was risen. Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to, I assume the commissioners might just be here for this day. We might need to, we'll probably need to make some room at the table, and we'll have you up for any closing. We're not closing, we're just continuing as we march forward. I'm trying to advance this bill, Representative Reinbold. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your presentation. The commissioners, is that Mr. Seamont there too?
Obviously.
I think he's a former constituent of mine and a current constituent of Representative Reinbold, unless you've moved again.
No, that's correct. I don't move, the districts move.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You did live in Peters Creek. Okay, that's how you did move. Yeah. No, we still, you know, we have an attachment if you live there. Welcome.
Thank you. So did you want us to
Well, I assumed you were here you were here to answer questions, and some issues came up, and I assume you were observing the bill process.
We have some comments,
and go ahead and put yourselves on the record.
Okay. My name is Kathy Forster. That's Foerster. I'm the chair and the engineering commissioner for the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission.
And I'm Dan Seamount, and I'm a commissioner with the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission.
And excited to be here.
I've been doing this for 14 years.
We're going to go about 15 minutes. We have the budget on the floor today, but I wanted to allow you guys to, if you had any statements or members had any questions, well, at least we can start the conversation.
Well, maybe I can spur some questions just by a few statements.
Sure.
You know, we've listened with interest to the testimony this morning, and we can't speak for the other agencies that are impacted by this, but for ourselves, we already consider cost to stakeholders and affected parties as part of our hearing process, and we also have a process for any interested party to get their questions asked and answered. We have, as the decision makers, we can't get into ex parte communications, and we're very careful not to do that. But we have staff members. You know, our executive assistant can help with clarity, and she can take a question and she can come to us and say, "What is this? You know, they don't understand what this means. Can you help me with this?" And we can do that. Or we have staff members who can answer questions. So we have a process within our agency that questions get asked and answered. Another thing that's different about that may be different about us. We don't work through the governor. We're an independent agency. We, for very obvious reasons, we have to be independent of the governor because we're asked to adjudicate on oil and gas issues that may pit the Department of Natural Resources against an operator or another landowner. So we don't work through the governor. And, as I hear people talk about, they don't understand it and then it happens, we often have multiple hearings. We'll have a hearing to consider legislation, a regulation, excuse me.
And it is right that this being cast, and, there we're probably talking about other agencies more than yours.
But
it does have impact on you.
Right, but we have a process in place, and other agencies could do this. You know, if at the end of a hearing or during a hearing it appears obvious to us that more ground needs to be plowed or that there is uncertainty or someone's brought up a point that maybe we do need to go back and reconsider our regulations, we will hold another hearing. We will publish new regulations or have a continuation. And, in fact, we've got a hearing. We've just completed, what was it, 3 or 4 hearings on hydraulic fracturing regulations.
Do you get a lot of public participation? I mean, other than Dr. Obermeyer or some folks like that?
Well, we get a wide variety of public participation. Okay. And, and all across the spectrum of quality and quantity, and that was supposed to get a laugh, but that's okay. And in addition to that, we also reach out through the media and speaking in public forums. And we, as you know, I can't speak for other agencies.
He's a little talk radio.
But we, yeah, I know. And sometimes that comes back to haunt you. And, you know, they pick what they like that you say and ignore the rest. But for our agency, as I said, we do include cost as part of our considerations. And we're a small and highly specialized staff. We don't have cost estimators, and we don't have people who are current on what industry's costs or what environmental communities' costs are, or what public costs are. But as part of the hearing process, we encourage people to come to us with their cost impacts, and we consider that in doing any of our regulations. So, we hear a lot of valid concerns for why this legislation is being considered, and yet we hear impacts on us that would be highly negative. And if we had to make an estimate on the impacts to anyone impacted from the regulations that we propose, one, we wouldn't be qualified to do a good job of that, and two, whatever we put into our public notice then might become a subject of debate in our hearing. And we go into the hearing on our regulations to understand, is this the right regulation? Is there something in our in industry's technology that we haven't considered in our regulations? Our regulations tend to deal a lot with physics. And if we got into a debate over cost estimates that...
I'm going to interject. When you answer a question, it's not an off-the-cuff question. I mean, is it an off-the-cuff, or do you have to engage a study, or give us some examples of that.
It depends on a question. A constituent, just a member of the public might call and say, "Why are you going to let hydraulic fracturing occur in this state? It'll kill my grandbaby." Close to a real question we got, and the answer to that is, hydraulic fracturing has been occurring for about 50 years in Alaska, and 25% of our wells have been hydraulically fractured, and we have rules in place that make it safe, and, you're welcome to come in and we'll talk through our rules with you. So that's an example of a question on a regulation that we would get. And so the questions are very sincere, but sometimes they come from a very low level of understanding, and so we work hard to, One of our important goals is to have a very informed public, because the more people know about this weird stuff that we do, the better we all are. The less people are scared of things that they shouldn't be scared of, the better able you guys are to make good legislation. If our hearings where we're trying to make our regulations good, valid, technically accurate, turned into a debate over, it's not going to cost us this, it's going to cost us two times this, it would derail our efforts to do what we intend to do. And we do a bad job. We either do a bad job of estimating them, or, three things. Or we could trust the regulated industry to tell us, and I've got some documents here of examples of them saying, if you enact that regulation, it's going to cost us millions of dollars and we'll have to shut in hundreds of wells. And, we enacted that regulation and they didn't shut in a single well. So, we would have a hard time getting to a good cost estimate, and we'd devolve, into a debate on dollars when we're there about physics. So that's our biggest concern with how that bill would impact our agency. But I sure hear a lot of valid concerns out there that maybe are addressed better by having agencies have a better process.
I have just a left-field hypothetical. Say if one of my constituents called you up and said, "Ms. Forrester, Ms. Seamount, do we have would you approve an adequate gas supply for a proposed pipeline deal we're dealing with? I'm just on one left-field hypothetical. Is that one you can easily answer?
Well, there's no we're not having any hearings about that right now. It's not up for...
Well, just have somebody walk in. How would you answer
that? Well, my answer would be as frustrating to them as it is to you guys.
And that's... I'm trying to get into the complexity. That was a softball.
The answer would be, when the operators come to us with a plan for how to market
North Slope Gas. The plan will include several technical details and you know what they plan to do, what they've done in the meantime to accelerate oil production, what they are going to do to mitigate gas losses when they start to sell the gas, when they're going to start to sell it, how much they're going to sell, and how this sale of Prudhoe Bay gas is going to affect the synergies with the use of gas to get oil out of the ground in other places across the North Slope. And if they come to us with a plan that, I know we're talking other things here, but if they come to us for a plan that demonstrates that they've considered alternatives and the alternative they're proposing is the one that promotes greater ultimate hydrocarbon recovery for the state of Alaska, then yes, we would approve that plan. That would be my answer to them.
Ms. Forster, I think you've heard a lot of sentiment about the regulatory process and wanting more openness and more candor and more quicker decisions. I assume you're here because you have some issues with, is your shop so complex you might have a harder time? If you'll communicate with me and my office and the sponsor, you know, I'm not saying is there a way to give a pass, but that's not that we don't like to do exemptions here, but how do we provide an avenue that doesn't have an unrealistic expectation? We're talking about most of our folks are talking about food safety regulations, much smaller permits, and there's a complexity here. We could probably go on for a couple hours talking about the complexities of the work you do. So if there's a path you see that working with Representative Reinbolt and me and my staff and outreach to individual members, we probably don't have time to pinpoint all of those right now, but I that's why I wanted to have you up here. So, and if you can volunteer any broader concerns about the bill, or as I think you've seen around the table, there's a lot of support for the much broader concept of having more transparency. And if
and I'd just like to make one more statement, Representative Stoltz. My commission holds the Alaska legislature in very high regard, and we intend to respect and abide by any legislation that you pass. And today we're not here to criticize. We're simply here to share concerns.
We take your presence as in the spirit of trying to make sure we don't have unintended consequences. I know that's not Representative Reinbold's. I doubt if she was talking to producers and when introducing this, it was probably small business people. Not to speak for her, but I see a nodding.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Any questions for the regulators here?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So, I'm reading the language in the bill, and we have a report due on Monday, and so the legislature is filling out to the penny what, you know, our personal situations are with our finances. And so when I read this and I read a good faith effort, the question that comes to my mind is, I mean, obviously that was put in there to allow for some flexibility in terms of the cost of providing the estimates and what have you. And so, Mr. Chair, I think I'd be interested in hearing at some point in the future about whether good faith effort shows up elsewhere in statute and what exactly good faith effort means at the end of the day.
Any other questions? Well, thank you both for being here.
Thank you very much.
Representative Reinbold, you want to give us any takeaways? We're obviously not going to pass this bill today, but the members have absorbed the issues, and we'll try to figure out how to get the best bill out of here.
Well, first of all, Mr. Co-Chairman, Mr. Chairman, I really want to thank you guys for listening to these concerns today. I know that we all have a lot on our plate, but this is something that is weighing very, very heavily on many, many people in the community and in municipalities, and also just to ensure that people report back into the legislature. If we give one exemption, that it's going to have a domino effect, and so I appreciate the fact that you have addressed that, and I would like to work with anybody, all of you, when I'm invited to work with on the committee substitute and incorporate all of your concerns and anything else that might arise in the future. And I really look forward to the opportunity.
I hate exemptions, but if there is a valid public policy reason, then the committee would certainly look at it, not just speaking for me. But the unintended consequences is what we always try to you can never predict them. There's Bill Thomas used to say, well, if he had No, no, I won't tell. It's 2029 because it had to be of the disposition and placement of his glasses. But, so with that, we will set this bill aside and bring it up as quick as I can. And I think you know you've heard some of the questions, and I think the administration has heard the questions. They can just figure how long it's going to take them to fold to you, Representative Reinbold.
Not a chance.
Did you have any questions? With that, I think we're going to be doing something else on the floor today. Whether or not we get back here this afternoon is questionable.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, we will stand in adjournment.